Okay, what's up, listeners? So this is the meat industry episode for Fighting Failure, the last episode of the agriculture section. It's been a pleasure leading the agriculture section, and I'm sad to hand over my host duties, but it's been a good ride, and Sanjay will be an excellent host, so I look forward to the conservation section coming up next. In this episode, so like I just said, we're going to do meat industry today. My co-hosts are...
Sandhya Stapleton.
Oscar Archibald.
Hi, I'm Theo Ansel.
Theo is being featured in this episode, so we're going to start doing this. We're going to invite some people onto the show, some professionals, some students, some peers, and we're going to, you know, give people the option. If you want to be featured in an episode, you are free to request it. You can send an email to
contact@fightingfailure.earth.
Theo has a lot of background knowledge on the meat industry, so I'm expecting this to be a great episode. I think he'll kind of lead us through it. Thank you so much to Theo and Oscar for helping me write the show notes for this episode because I was traveling, and let's jump into this. The meat industry used to be very bad for workers, but became quite a good business, on par with jobs like being a mechanic or an engineer. However, McDonald's, the first big fast food chain, emerged, and this led to new ideals in the meat industry: uniformity, conformity, and inexpensiveness. Workers would be given one easily replaceable purpose. Their wages plummeted, and so did working conditions as fast food companies grew. So did demand, leading to the huge unsanitary meat warehouses, which is the kind of big industry which we have today.
To break that down a little bit, what happened was basically there were all these massive meat houses in Austria and countries like that which had these extremely unsanitary conditions. And then as kind of the meat industry moved to the U.S. for their own food instead of relying off Europe, what they got were these, like, this was during, like, the big boom in the economy. There were these, like, fantastic jobs, basically, because you were just managing all this meat and you were getting this similar pay to being a mechanic or an engineer. It was just as respectable. And then fast food chains came along, like McDonald's. And instead of having, like, this nice little restaurant where you can go and sit down, they started opening up chains. They began opening up more and more restaurants. There's more and more demand. And they have these new ideals that replace the old ideals of nice conditions and nice work. And what it leads to is basically these workers become tools instead of the workers actually having jobs in of themselves. They become just a tool for the industry. And that's kind of what's led to today and all the issues that happen now. The workers are not being treated well. They used to be, but no longer because of the change in the way the food market worked, especially due to, of course, the fast food industry.
At the beginning of the episode, sorry, before we jump into statistics, I forgot to thank my parents, Rebecca and Ramsey Kanan, for joining our Patreon at the Advocate tier. And so they're the first subscribers to our Patreon.
Patreon is a website where listeners can donate a small amount monthly to our podcast. The proceeds will go towards making our podcast better, as well as creating a documentary about climate change solutions. Patrons get benefits such as exclusive episodes, early access to our shows, and a shout out like this one when they first join. We would really appreciate if you could support us from as little as $1 a month. The link will be in the show notes.
So overall in the world, 39% of adults are overweight and 13% are obese. Now, what's the difference between overweight and obese? Well, obese is basically overweight in a more extreme level, to the fact that it's more difficult for people to move, for people to live lives as they would usually because of their body weight. For example, in American Samoa, over 90% of the adults are overweight or obese, and that has made their economy in a very precarious position due to the fact that what's happening is that they are finding it harder to work, they are finding it harder to be productive because of all these illnesses and all these side effects, and the fact that they can't move as much because of their weight. And this is also and it's mainly to do with the food they eat. For example, in American Samoa, they get these extremely fatty lamb flaps that are actually meant to be dog food, and they're from, I think, New Zealand or Australia, and it's just extremely unhealthy, and it tastes good for the islanders, so they eat it, but it is extremely unhealthy for people in that country to be eating meat of that high fat content.
Yeah, so I guess it's it's not so much that, you know, we don't want people to think that we're fat shaming, but I 100% agree that, you know, it's a lot better if there's, you know, healthier options for people. And that's a big problem with the large meat industry that we have.
So yes, the average supermarket, at least in the United States, has 40,000 products, and a lot often, around, I think around 12,000 of them are meat products. That is kind of interesting to see the comparison of meat products comparatively to vegetable products. The top four meat industries in the United States own 80% of the market. No one's getting into the market, is basically what I'm saying. These massive companies control enough to stop newcomers.
The average American eats roughly 270 pounds of meat each year. That's 122.5 kilograms of meat. And that is a lot of meat in a year. That's about 10 kilograms a month. And considering that, like, you might have, what, a quarter pound burger? So if you had a 1/4 pound burger every day, 365 days a year, that's quite a lot of meat. That isn't even close to the amount of meat that average American eats. So that would be about 100 pounds of meat if you ate a quarter pound burger. It's quite a lot of meat every day. That's less than half, probably less than a third, or about a third of the meat that American eats every year. So imagine eating 3/4 pound burgers every day. A quarter pound burger for every meal. That's how much meat the average American eats.
Well, it's because, of course, food is subsidized. And as well as that, they're producing a lot of it. 32,000 pigs are slaughtered on the so-called kill floor of the abattoirs every single day in the United States. That's just in the United States as well. There could be 10 times that in the entire world, or 20 times that. It's very detrimental. Livestock is
15%
of all greenhouse gases. Mainly because of a few different issues, especially the fact that cows produce ethane, and ethane is roughly 100 times more dangerous than CO2.
So you can imagine, like, you know, there's so much meat in the market that the price is driven down in comparison to, like, vegetables, which can only be grown and harvested for part of the year, right? And so you can imagine how much easier it is for, like, an average American who has, like, kind of a lower wage. You can imagine them going to the store and just comparing the prices of getting vegetables and getting meat, and you can imagine that it's so much cheaper because of this mass production. And so that's a problem with the meat industry, is that it's just been built up to this place that it's so easy to get meat.
Roughly 30% of the Earth's land surface mass is used for livestock farming. Food and water and land are often scarce in many parts of the world. This just shows that this is an inefficient use of resources. And the food is also extremely unhealthy. For example, 1 in 3 Americans born after 2000 will have early onset diabetes, and among the minorities, the rate is 1 in 2, which is very high. And that's not even just diabetes in general, that's early onset diabetes. So we could be getting more than that. We could get half of Americans will born after 2000 will have diabetes. That is shocking.
And again, we're not trying to shame people. We're just saying that unsustainable meat industry and unhealthy meat as a result of factory farming is creating huge health problems on a wide scale.
All right, let's get into the problems.
It's the same, you know, in that fertilizers episode, this was a huge problem. And so you have, for example, so manure, cow feces, right? And so whether that's being spread onto land, like intentionally, or if that's just, you know, kind of their waste and it's just being left there, it is a problem because you're going to get these huge sludgy areas. And then as the rains come in, of course, you're going to get runoff going into the oceans, and then you're going to and lakes and rivers and all your water systems, and then you're going to get algae blooms and bacterial blooms, and then you're going to get fish dying. And then that's a huge problem for the ecosystem because, you know, certain birds rely on fish, and, you know, it's going to just cause this great collapse because, you know, when you pull one animal out of the food web, you know, the others start to decline. And so it's a big problem with algae blooms, is fish dying, birds dying. And so a lot of that comes from inorganic fertilizer, but it can often be from manure and from cattle farming.
And so often what you have with factory farms is that you have huge numbers of animals concentrated in a very small space, and all their muck, all their manure is concentrated into a small area. They've just got these huge lagoons, literally just swimming pools full and full of sludge and animal excrement. But the problem really here is that it breaks the normal cycle of animal agriculture. What you normally have is you have like a field with a couple of cows on it. The cows eat the grass, then they do the poops, and then the poop fertilizes the grass, and then that makes grass, and then they eat the grass. It's a self sort of contained cycle. The only other input is the energy of the sun, and the output is some, you know, quarter pound burgers that you seem to eat three of every day. So what they do with factory farming is they're just sort of replacing this normal cycle and creating just huge problems in terms of having to grow huge amounts of crops to feed them animals, and then also having to deal with the huge amounts of sludge.
Yeah, and also, you know, as fecal matter decays, that's still, you know, it's still releasing gases into the atmosphere. So you can just see the number of problems with this, the mass cattle farming. And then, you know, that's not only are the cattle kind of burping out that methane, but they're also, they're, as their fecal matter decays, that's also putting out greenhouse gases and contributing to climate change. And so you're getting, you know, so there's lots of problems with manure and overuse of manure. And so if you're like new to farming and you spread too much manure onto your farms as well, that's going to smother the grass, and that's actually going to be less beneficial, or smother the crops and be less beneficial. Yeah, more detrimental than it would be just to leave it alone.
So the next big problem after manure is GMO, as genetically modified. So this is where scientists sort of take plants, sort of imagine if it's a bit like hacking into their genes and their DNA, switching stuff around to try and make it better, and then selling it. So there's some really horrible stuff that some of these companies, Monsanto, are doing. So it's quite a bit of extortion, really, selling them at very high prices and often sort of coming round to farmers and trying to convince them that the GMO is better. There's a lot of pressure to switch to GMO, and then farmers think they have to switch to GMO to keep up. And then that's a huge problem. There's also been some unintended side effects, because nature seems to know what it's doing. It's been doing it for millions of years. If we come along and try to fiddle around with the DNA, it doesn't always work so well, and there have been some health effects with that. Another thing that happened was that companies, Monsanto, argued that they had patented this specific crop. And that meant that if a farm, for farmers, they usually sort of plant the seeds, right? And then they harvest seeds off the thing and replant it. So that once you get one set of seeds, they just keep self-sustaining themselves, right? But then Monsanto said that farmers, it was illegal for farmers to have bought the seed and then get the seeds from the crop and then make another set of things without buying more seed from them, because they just wanted lots of money. So farmers were just getting sued by this company. And also what happened was that the company then started further modifying their seeds, so that once you put the seeds in the ground and they grew and made crop, the seeds that came off that plant were sterile. They didn't actually work. It's almost like a self-destructing plant, is that you grow once and you can't grow it again. And like, you can understand why this is good for the GMO seed company, but it is clearly not good for the farmers. And that's just really horrible. Another big problem. Yeah, exactly. Another big problem is when seeds are sort of blown. So say I'm Farmer Joe, and Farmer Bill is in the field next to me, right? And Farmer Bill is using GMO, and I'm using natural wheat, if you would. And then if Farmer Bill's seeds, in a gust, sort of blow onto my land, or something blows onto my land, and then some of my crop starts being sort of GMO because it's sort of being blown onto my field, that's a huge problem, because now I'm going to get sued for having GMO thing without having bought it or whatever. So that's a really huge problem.
Yeah, but it's a detrimental cycle, the way that they're suing, and then the way that it affects other farmers, not even farmers which might have bought GMO seeds in the first place. And it's crazy that that's working. And so our next point is loss of soil fertility. A lot of hoofed animals, like cattle, will trample the land, so it'll harm the grass, right? Kill the grass, and then the continual trampling on the soil will overturn the soil the same way that it does in tillage, and then that'll cause the release of soil carbon, and it'll kill the microbes that can store the soil carbon, and then you have this whole, again, another detrimental process. From it's more problematic when you have a lot of cows in a small space, because they are trampling that land daily, and they're not, you know, that is a big problem.
As we were talking about before, there is a huge pressure for farmers to industrialize, but really this is, instead of a win-win, this is a lose-lose situation, because if you don't industrialize, i.e. if you don't sort of switch to pesticides, fertilizers, separation of meat and arable, all this sort of stuff, if you don't industrialize, you won't be producing as much crop, and it'll be more expensive for each crop and you'll go out of business, right? But if you do industrialize, it's quite expensive to industrialize, as Theo will talk about later. There's a lot of pressure in terms of your contracts with the big meat companies, like licensing hens from them to grow and then selling them back or whatever. Changing is expensive and it puts a lot of people out of business. And in fact, in India, I can't remember the statistic, but lots and lots of farmers are committing suicide because they industrialized and then they just couldn't keep up with the expenses. They have huge debts. So yeah, it's a big problem. It's a lose. You lose either way, really.
Yeah, like the farmer strike in India is caused partially by that.
Locals not getting jobs. So again, you know, as you have these large meat companies who are mass producing and mass exporting their produce, you're getting small town farmers losing a lot of business. So in Malawi, you know, you have these local farmers, right? And they're producing sustainable meat, you know, what's somewhat sustainable meat, and they're doing a good job of it. And they're sending that off to stores in as much quantity as they can. But then you have this mass-produced corn-fed beef coming from South Africa and stuff, and that's a lot cheaper than the local meat. And so then you get people in Malawi buying the South African meat rather than the local Malawian meat. And then that's going to put Malawian farmers out of business because they're buying from South African mass producers of meat. And that's just one example.
And so then another problem is that even if, say, a big pig farming company, like a factory pig farming company, comes to your village and wants to build a pig farm, chances are your village is probably not going to benefit from that. Chances are that that company isn't actually going to employ most of the locals. So even when there is employment, it doesn't usually employ locals. It might just employ a couple of people who are maybe a bit more educated, whatever, to run this sort of stuff. And there isn't really much space for manual, low-educated labor that benefits people who are suffering from poverty. This next point is a huge problem and is probably one of the reasons I went vegetarian. And that's this wastage of human food. So let's imagine back 1,000 years ago. A small town in Buckinghamshire. Okay, imagining it, right? And so you've got this pig, right? And the pig is snuffling around in the sort of back garden, eating the little scraps that are thrown at it, eating like maybe a bit of grass, maybe a bit of this, bit of that, bit of that. All the sort of stuff that humans can't really eat, like orange peels. I don't know. Pigs eat a lot of different stuff, right? But then six months comes and they slaughter the pig and they make bacon. Now that bacon is quite yummy, but that bacon is made from food that the humans couldn't eat. So the pig has turned scraps into bacon. Now that is genius. But nowadays, nutritious soy, often GMO from like places like the Amazon rainforest, nutritious soy that could feed billions of people who are currently hungry is instead fed to animals who are in horrible conditions to make food that is much less healthy. The original food, like soy, is quite healthy. It's quite nutritious. The meat you get from it is often quite fatty. If you feed animals soy, they're not used to eating soy. So it's not very good food, animal food that you get out the other end. Like not animal food, but like animal as food that you get out the other end, right? And so then that's exported wherever, and people are, as we said before, developing health problems like diabetes or obesity because of this unhealthy food, when instead, if they just ate the soy, you could feed so many more people. It's just really inefficient to try and turn soy into animal because you need so much of it and you get so little out the other end. So it's a huge waste, really.
Yeah, and I just want to again highlight how that just this the also the detrimental process of the growing of the soy and the exporting of it. So you have this, you know, you have the natural Amazon rainforest, right? But then these companies who are going to kind of mass plant and mass produce soy come in and they deforest a large area, right? And then they plant their soy and they till and they plant it and then they grow it and then they harvest it and then they cut it down and then they do that every year, right? And so then this soy is going to be exported and then, you know, the process of the exportation, you know, whatever, it's being flown over, it's being boated wherever, and then you end up deforesting the natural land and you end up putting out emissions due to the global supply chains, and it's just this ridiculous process just to get some soy. You end up getting this ridiculous process just trying to get soy produce to your cattle ranches.
The livestock, they graze, and their manure is their own fertilizer, and it's a very self-contained system. It's quite efficient. But now we're separating these two things, and that is far less efficient than it would otherwise be.
What we mean by arable is just crops.
So this one is about obesity, which, of course, factory farmed meat, as we've said before, is very unhealthy, and it can lead to obesity. And it's kind of an endless cycle, because if people are more obese, they tend to exercise less, and would call for more, like, door-to-door or delivery services. Like, I've never heard of this delivery service, but Deliveroo. I've actually never heard of any delivery services, so Uber Eats. I've heard of that one. So essentially, they order for more from more delivery services, and those delivery services are often from places like fast food restaurants, or again, factory farm meat, and the things they deliver are bad for the environment and for climate products.
Yeah, I think there was some guy who actually sued McDonald's because he got obese because of factory farmed meat. I can't remember how that turned out. I don't want to promise to put a link in the description, but I'll put a link in the description. So the next problem, fish meal, is a surprisingly big problem that surprisingly few people have heard of. Fish meal is sort of this substance. It's like a bit like a food stuff, I guess. It's made by just grinding up fish, often things like anchovies, small fish like that, to make this sort of, I mean, I want to say nutrition, but it's not really nutritious. So it provides nutrition, but it's not necessarily very healthy, but it does provide the stuff that you'd get in fish. It's sort of like a powder. It's kind of disgusting if you see pictures of it. The extraction of fish, such as anchovy, to make fish meal causes huge environmental destruction in places such as Peru. There's a specific location that's just been absolutely destroyed by these fish meal manufacturing plants, because not only is there just all the fish is being removed, and that creates ecosystem destruction, because then it means other fish don't have prey and birds don't have stuff to eat, but also just because of the toxic sludge that then gets pumped back into the sea from the fish meal factories. And then this is just shipped abroad to feed farm fish in other countries such as Australia. I don't know if they use it to feed livestock, like mammalian livestock, but they definitely use it to feed other fish, which is a bit gross. But it's just hugely inefficient because you put so much fish in and you really don't feed that many farmed fish out the other end. And because of this overfishing, fishermen have to just go miles and miles out just to get a small catch. And the locals really don't get much out of it. They don't get to eat any of the nutritious fish that they catch. They just live in a toxic, sludgy environment. I mean, the fish is literally piped to the factories off the boats. It's really, really horrible. So fish meal is a problem many people don't know about, but many people should know about it. And so you should avoid buying farmed fish. It's really not more sustainable because of this.
Every year, $38 million in government subsidies go to the meat industry, while only $17 million in subsidies is given to the vegetable companies. And that's significant because what we're seeing is that the government is supporting meat industries comparatively to vegetable companies, right? Because they are giving double the subsidies, and that shows clearly that they have this bias toward these large, more powerful companies comparatively to these smaller, yet more healthy usual companies. And even then, the meat companies often own these vegetable companies, but still want more money for the meat industry part of their work, because overall, the meat industry does profit from meat comparatively to vegetables, because in America, countries like America, meat is just far more popular as a substance comparatively. So to prove this, that the government really does favor the meat industry comparatively, what we can see is that in 1972, the FDA conducted 50,000 food safety inspections, and in 2006, that dropped to 10,000 comparatively food searches. And so what is the FDA? Well, the FDA is Food and Drug Administration, and their job is to test food and see whether it's actually healthy or not. And often food isn't as good as it might seem. For example, the horse meat scandal. The horse meat scandal is when meat from horses enter the supply chain as beef and end up being sold in many products in the UK. But by large brands like Sodexo and others. In September 2012, the Food Standards Agency of Ireland, this is specifically not the US but the UK, tested a range of frozen foods. The test showed unknown DNA present in the samples. So they tested it. They found cow, pig, and horse DNA. So then these results come back, and with over a third of these products contain horse DNA. And 85% of all these products contain pig. And this led to the horse meat scandal. Well, how did this end up in our food? Well, the beef in this frozen lasagna and spaghetti bolognese, made by the French manufacturer Comigel, was up to 100% horse. And Comigel had been supplying products to Tesco, Aldi, and Findus. They had been supplying the population of the UK and Ireland with horse-infected meat. And the reason that all of this is happening is not because the meat industry is not producing unhealthy meat. Oh no, quite the contrary. It's that the meat industry has important figures inside governments, like the US government. For example, important government officials have often worked for or with meat companies. E.g., Clarence Thomas, one of the Supreme Court justices. And all these lobbyists and powerful figures who have all these connections to the meat industry stop it from being investigated. It's not that there's not these issues happening. They are happening. For example, with the COVID-19 issues, they're all being packed together in a very close space, and it's quite detrimental for these people's health. But the fact is, these people are very good at hiding what's happening, and that is the key factor. And now, lobbyists have made another move. Lobbyists want to stop the USDA from being able to launch any investigations by pushing an ag gag policy, which is legislation that will make it illegal to document any activity within meat processing plants. And this makes it impossible to hold companies accountable for their actions. Because if you can't document anything inside the factory, there's nothing can be shown unless it's out of the factory. And that would only, and that's what the FDA has to run its recalls and so on. But unfortunately, the FDA is more inclined to stick with the government, so now there might be lots of unhealthy meat in the market that we don't know about just because things like the FDA do not want this knowledge to get out. And in moving from the government entrapment of people not being able to basically label anything with workers, we'll move on to the entrapment that the farmers have. So the average hen house inside America costs around $300,000. So, that's quite a hefty sum. Are farmers normally able to afford this? Well, here's the thing. Farmers have to pay a lot of money for these houses, and they often cannot afford it. Well, how are they supposed to do it? How are they supposed to plant anything? How are they supposed to have their chickens sell on the market? Well, food companies come in. The typical grower with two hen houses has a debt of $500,000 to food companies who pay for quite a large amount of these hen houses. But you originally don't start with that much. Imagine you start with only one hen house. You're in like maybe a debt of $200,000 because you can pay for $100,000 worth of it. And then they start asking for improvements like blinds or shutters or darkness completely for the animals or new technology that they need for you to be able to continue using whatever you want. So, you add them, your debt piles up. They want you to buy a second hen house now, buy a second one. You're even deeper debt. And you just get into deeper, deeper debt that you can't escape from. You have to pay it. But how are you going to pay it? Because the typical grower in America only earns around $18,000 a year compared to an average debt of $500,000. That takes around 35 years to pay off. And that would be your entire income. You might never ever be able to pay this debt off because you've been entrapped in it. And these companies, take advantage of farmers this way by loan sharking them, basically, and digging them into deeper holes by forcing them to buy in more and more advancement. So it's difficult to escape from this kind of malpractice of trades inside the meat industry. And when you do try and escape from this, you are shunned from your communities for doing anything that could be seen as against the company. You might lose all your money, your friends, and you'll have to sell your land very quickly. Possibly just for a small error or not wanting to add something. That is the stakes here. It is basically impossible for farmers. Okay.
So another big problem with the meat industry is actually to do with sort of less factory farming and more the idea of happy meat. So some people might not be vegetarian, but they might say, I only have like organic meat that's like humanely raised and humanely killed. But the ultimate thing about any animal which is humanely killed is there is a fundamental conflict of interest between the one doing the killing and the one who wants to eat it. So basically, if you're someone who sort of really believes in animal welfare and making sure that any animals they eat are humanely killed, chances are you're not going to go apply for a job in an abattoir. Like, maybe there's some exceptions, but I'm willing to wager that someone who is an animal rights activist is not working in an abattoir. Even if that abattoir is, like, government certified and claims to have humane killing policies, there's just people who work there probably aren't really into animal welfare. Like, I think a lot of people who work in abattoirs are often illegal immigrants, desperate for a job, or they're high on drugs, or they're brandishing knives. Like, so I think in UK abattoirs, there's like a vet who's meant to check, right? They're meant to check if that everything's hygienic, everything's safe, sanitized, the animals being well treated. Okay, but imagine this. Say you're one vet in like a factory farm, right? And there are 30 abattoir workers who are high on drugs, super buff, and with waving crazy knives. How would you feel? How confident would you feel about stopping the line, stopping the production line, and making them have to work longer that day just because of hygienic concern?
I don't think that many abattoir workers are on drugs and carry knives around. I wish they did. That would make it a bit more exciting. But no, I think that many of them are poor, and often poverty is correlated with drug use. So they might be on drugs, but also they might not have enough money to actually get drugs.
I'm not generalizing about all abattoir workers, but in a book I was reading, which I've spoken a lot about on the show, Farmageddon, there was a report from a vet who worked in an abattoir about literally being threatened with a knife, or being threatened by an abattoir worker who was high and had a knife. And the reason that they didn't want the vet to stop the line to make sure it was all hygienic was because he wanted to get into the break room and have his next hit. So this might not be this case for every abattoir, but fundamentally, people who care about animal rights.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, this. I think the main problem with that, and I, you know, that of course it comes into that, is poverty, and because, you know, a lot of people working in those jobs, because they're not very high paying, are people who just are desperate for money, and so they're, you know, they're applying for that, but they don't have a significant interest in their job. They're just doing it for money, right? And so it's not a big concern to them whether or not the animals are healthy, what they're being fed, the conditions that they're being raised in. And so I guess that's kind of the big problem there.
Corn is also an unlikely killer in the meat industry problem. Lots of different foods are just clever rearrangements of corn, creating an illusion of diversity. In fact, 30% of the US's total surface area is used for growing corn at a rate of 200 bushels of corn in every acre, and farmers are subsidized for this corn by the bushel. Lots of different products are made using corn. I'm going to list a lot here. Ketchup, cheese, Twinkies, batteries, peanuts, salad dressing, jelly, syrup, juice, crackers, Kool-Aid, whiskey, oil, adhesive, gas, cosmetics, vegetables, engineered bones, hand soap, varnish, toothpaste, matches, aspirin, plastic slugs, charcoal, diapers, Motrin, meat, and fast food. Corn is in almost all foods nowadays, constituting high percentages of food, and it is being fed to animals despite it not being their natural food, which is actually a huge problem. The high concentration of corn for animals leads to mutated E. coli bacteria, which spread very quickly. E. coli poisoning epidemics breaking out mean that food has to be resent back to factory, often millions of tons, which is very bad to the environment due to both transportation and huge food waste. This means that hamburger meat is often cleansed with ammonia to remove E. coli, and ammonia is the main cause of acid rain. You can see there's a bit of a conflict of interest there. Also, ammonia smells like wee. Do you really want that on your burger? Antibiotic resistance is a huge problem within factory farming, because often the farmers just don't really care. They just, if any animals are sick, they just give them antibiotics. In fact, at least maybe not now in the UK, but maybe still in the US, I'm not sure. They definitely used to do it in the UK, was that they'd just literally put antibiotics in normal pig feed. So even healthy pigs would just be eating antibiotics in every meal because it made them grow faster. But of course, this is a huge problem because it meant that the bacteria quickly became resistant to the antibiotics. And then there are these super bugs that are resistant to medicines, which is makes it more difficult to treat illnesses.
But right now I have to sign off. I'm sorry, guys, that I have to leave early on my last episode, but I'm sure I'm leaving it in good hands. I'm gonna hand it over to Oscar to host this, the end of this episode. But I just want to thank my co-host. I want to thank Theo for coming on today, and I want to thank all my listeners for being so supportive throughout my agriculture section. Thank you for listening. I hope you guys have learned a lot about you know, the problems and solutions with agriculture and how you can be a kind of good citizen in an agricultural sense. And with that, I will sign off.
So farmers in nations like Mexico are much more environmentally friendly comparatively to the big companies that are in the USA. This is good, right? Because we have these companies that are more balanced and the animals are most likely treated better. And also, they're not producing as much toxic fumes. They're not exploiting as many workers. That's good. But the big companies come to countries like Mexico, they run them out of work. So now, these big companies come, they can sell stuff for cheaper, people buy that stuff for cheaper because it's clearly the better alternative for them. If they don't have that much money, that's the clear alternative. Because you can't make a profit if someone else is selling it for less, and they are selling it mass, right? It's going to be basically impossible to win against them, even if your quality is better. Because people might buy it once in every month or once every few months because it's nicer, but it costs more. So people just are less inclined to buy your meat and you will probably be run out of business. Well, where are you going to go? There's really only one place to go, the U.S., because that's where the companies come from. That's where people with your similar line of work come from. So they move to the U.S. and they go to the meat industry because, well, of course, the meat industry is where they hold similar ideals. They hold similar jobs because it's same kind of branch. It's you're making meat just in a different way. And this is continuing a vicious cycle of destroying environmentally friendly products and destroying livelihoods. And often they're illegal because they can't afford to wait all that time to get a visa or a green card. And they don't have the money to pay. And that leads to them basically being illegal, and that means the companies can extort them and send them away to the ICE if they really want to. And the ICE is the immigration, it's the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So it's like, it's of course the immigration agency. And if you are committing illegal acts, you will be sent there, and you don't get the best of treatment. And ICE and these companies have a deal. So they send a certain amount of legal immigrants to the ICE. ICE lets the other legal immigrants stay at the company. You might be working your behind off for 3 or 4 years and get nothing because they basically just send you away. They don't care about you anymore. You're not of use. So they use these people. They exploit them, extort them, and then they use them to knock more people out of the land by like knocking down forests like the Amazon for like whatever uses they need them for. And that kills indigenous tribes. And thank you, Juan Bolsonaro. Sorry, Jean Bolsonaro. It's his name, not Juan. And this is for the conditions for these people that are forced to do all this. It is somewhat similar to modern day slavery because you're getting terrible working conditions. You're getting tiny amounts of pay. You can just be sold off to like the place where you get locked up in cages and separated from your children forever. And you're also pretty close to getting COVID. And you're also supporting industry that, in theory, because the price of grain is being driven up, it's stopping the world from getting food. It's driving the price of grain up. If this grain was used to feed humans instead of animals, we could feed 3.5 billion more people. And that number is substantial because people still aren't being fed. And if we could feed them, we could feed them and not waste all of our land on cows and so on. We could create a more a more sustainable society where people can actually eat food and live lives, important lives.
Now let's quickly talk about water. 55% of all water supplies in the United States go towards animal agriculture. That is just a huge amount of water. And in fact, it takes 2,400 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of beef. Therefore, eating just one fewer pound of beef, maybe four fewer quarter pound burgers, equates to not showering for 6 months. That is just, it is just absolutely insane to think about how much water it takes to create meat and dairy as well. 1 gallon of milk, that's quite a lot of milk, you know, but 1 gallon of milk takes 683 gallons of water to create. It's just off the charts, really, how terrible for the environment this is. In places like California, which have just very scarce water supplies, and they are struggling to provide their citizens with drinking water, yet they have some of the biggest mega dairies in the world. It just doesn't make much sense. It's such a waste of water, to be honest. It's such a waste of water how much water goes into making beef. So if you just, like, maybe you don't want to go to vegetarian, and I get it, just have meat like one or two times less every week and you're saving thousands of gallons of water. Seriously, do it. Instead of drinking a gallon of milk, you could drink a gallon of water and 682 other people could also drink a gallon of water. That's how crazy that is.
Overgrazing. Okay, well, overgrazing is causing the number of animals carried in a rangeland or more than its grazing capacity. So the animals are removing nutrients from soil without soil getting the time to recover from the nutrients because, of course, the animals are taking them too fast for any of the soil to actually be able to reclaim them. And this results in bare soil, and that's washed up by the water, and the fertile land becomes barren, clogged waterways that barely hospitable to live in. And that's often why animals are basically standing in their own feces for their entire life in these horrific conditions. That is why. Because what we're doing is we're locking them in these big, barren, clogged waterways. They egest, and when they egest, feces comes out, and they have to basically sit in their own feces. And that is not any condition that anyone should be living in. And as well as that, the soil that's being eroded at basically has a lot of CO2 in it, so it's releasing it by eroding it away with all this with these waterways.
Now let's move on to the solution section.
Things can get better.
Organic food is great because it doesn't use the same pesticides and fertilizers and those dangerous chemicals that destroy the soil, like we talked about in episode 6 and 7. Yeah. So while organic food doesn't mean that you're not wasting the same amount of water, it does mean that the animals and the land isn't being destroyed by chemicals. So it's better than nothing, and especially for small animals like chickens, organic really makes quite a big difference because chickens don't have nearly as much impact as beef. So if you get just if you're mostly vegetarian but you have organic chicken, then that's really not too terrible.
So go also for non-GMO soy and corn because you want to check that your soy products are labeled as non-GMO or rainforest free, and that's just going to be better in general because you're getting it from less disgusting alternatives. Basically, you can be vegetarian, flexitarian, eat meat less often. When you do, try and eat it organically. I know it's not always possible because some people are much poorer, and it's often not possible for them to eat like that. But if you are in a position in which it's more difficult to do so, I would try and, like, I don't know even if you have the time for this, but if you can, try and lobby for companies to raise the price of meat and lower the price of vegetables because that's more.
And if you're in a position where you can do this financially, I really, really request that you try meat alternatives and vegetarian meals. So there's just sort of two separate things. Meat alternatives is stuff like corn, although I don't recommend corn, it's not that tasty. Shop around, try a couple of different stuff, but meat alternatives these days are actually getting really good. Top recommendations, mince and sausages tend to be done very well. Don't try vegetarian bacon, it's...
It was awful. We had it on this Duke of Edinburgh trip and I ate it, it tasted like...
David and I just had to eat both, like, 10 pieces of bacon each so it didn't go to waste. Yeah, so definitely try, especially if having something like bolognese, which is made with beef, which we know is very inefficient. Just sub in, like, vegetarian sort of mince that you can find in most shops, sub that in, and as long as you've got good flavorings, it should still taste good. I strongly recommend that you try that. Tag us on Instagram if you do. We'd love to see that. And that's a really good way to shave 6 months worth of showering just by having vegetarian.
So also go free range, pasture fed meat that uses land that can't really be used otherwise often. And meat is happy until hopefully they're not still happy when they're being killed. That would be a little bit.
It depends when they're killed. I haven't done too much research on this, if I'm being honest, but at least I know kangaroos in Australia, they basically let these crazed people go out in the middle of the night and shoot all the kangaroos. And apparently it's humane because they have to be killed by one shot to the head, according to the law. But that's what the law says. But what the crazy people do in the middle of the night in the middle of Australia is another question. So hopefully humane slaughter. Technically, the government says it's humane and it's certified to be humane. But, you know, like, what is actually happening by the people who are actually sort of volunteering to get paid to slaughter animals? You know, you don't know. So that depends on your ethical view on this, to be honest.
Yeah.
Try and keep things local, because if that's pure transport models, you can see how your food is made. And when you're going local, often try and see whether you're supporting a company like Sodexo, which is not great company, and see like if there's alternatives that cut their meat, people who produce meat or things, any food really, that is not produced by corporations or used by corporations like Sodexo to support their prisons, etc., which is just not great. You can protest, you can do some activism, and it often works in something like Mega Dairy, or it changes the labels, etc., and it often gives the animals better condition.
I'll talk about a few of these. So stopping the Mega Dairy, there was plans to build, I think this was back in 20-something, there were plans to build like a huge 8,000-cow Mega Dairy in England, and people protested and said, we do not want this American-style factory farming dairy in our country on this scale. Absolutely no, and that didn't happen. The next thing was changing the labelling, and this was basically requiring, I think it was Tesco, to say whether it was free-range or eggs or not, and something like that. So there was a big protest about that. They did a stunt in Tesco, and that was widely publicised, and Tesco backed down and changed their labelling. So if activism does work, it does make companies change their ways. It's difficult, yes, but especially if you're sort of exposing a company publicly or a supermarket, especially when their vibe is unlike an oil company. A supermarket is very much like, oh, we're for the people and we love you guys. So they might be more willing to sort of change their stuff. So,
a supermarket? Yes. If a supermarket says we're for the people.
They love our money.
Our money.
They love our loyalty. That's why we have Nectar cards and Tesco club cards. Fish should be fed to people. It is quite nutritious. It has omega-3 fatty acids. It's quite available. I'm not saying you should eat fish all the time because it's not incredible for the environment. But what I am saying is that people in fishing communities should eat the fish that they fish and not sell the fish that they fish to feed other fish that are then fished and eaten as fish.
And, of course, primarily do not eat cheap meat if you can. Avoid gummies, marshmallows, they contain gelatin. Avoid fast food, that is bad for your health and also bad for people who make it. Just, like, yeah, I think Oscar probably has some, like, alternatives.
Yeah, so, but you have to be very careful about gelatin, because this comes from, most likely will come from cheap meat. So vegetarian marshmallows are a good replacement to normal marshmallows. They don't melt as well, but they taste really nice if you have them, say, in a hot chocolate. Fruit pastilles, if you're looking for a gummy sweet, fruit pastilles are vegan. Also, M&S, Percy Pigs, Colin the Catapults, those are all vegetarian. Often fruit gums, if they're sort of soft, they're vegetarian because they're made with pectin, not gelatin. Just always check the ingredients, check if it says suitable for vegetarians. And also, like Thea was saying, don't get cheap meat. If it's McDonald's, KFC, even on an aeroplane, if you don't know where the meat is sourced from, get the vegetarian option. It's not usually that grim. You should always ask whenever you're planning to have meat, such as at a restaurant, where the meat's come from and how it's been produced and killed. And if they're not willing to sort of proudly tell you how responsibly sourced their meat is, then just get the vegetarian option. At places like on airlines, at McDonald's, it's never going to be, or very rarely going to be, very well-sourced meat. So you should just, you know, have the chips, or places are increasingly having vegetarian and vegan options as well. Those are some good opportunities as well to limit your meat intake. And also, if you're in China or quite possibly many other poor countries, there isn't a cultural awareness of animal welfare in the same way, so that it's just much, much harder to find environmentally friendly wheat. So if you're on like a trip to China, try and avoid meat at all costs, because there's almost all of their meat is either factory farmed or farmed by small farmers, also in bad conditions and with bad environmental impacts. So if you're in somewhere, it's the same sort of policy. If you don't know that this meat is good from a good source, then just get the vegetarian option.
Well, I think that's it.
We seem to have much fewer solutions than problems, or we just didn't have as much to say about it. Problems are always the interesting part, but we like to give you guys solutions, because that's really what's going to make the difference. If everyone knows that there's a problem but no one has a solution, like, what's the point in that? Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Please, please, just consider, on a very fundamental level, flexitarianism, reducing your meat intake. It has a huge impact. Now, I was at Drama last night, and performed a show, and afterwards we got pizza, and I was very happy to see that about half the people were having the vegetarian pizza. So we reduced demand for meat, and that was really awesome, because often if you're just a singular vegetarian, like, what impact am I really making? But if you think about it, if it means that one pizza is ordered vegetarian instead of meat, that is an impact. That is a change. And when everyone changes together, that creates global change, that creates a better environment for us and our next generation to live off. So please do consider reducing your meat intake. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode. Thank you so much to Theo for volunteering in this episode, and also actually the next episode. And thank you to He Chose Parents for subscribing on the Patreon. Please consider, even if it's only at the $1 tier, it will make a huge difference in our ability to communicate environmental ideas to younger people, making a change in this world. So thank you, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. We'd love to have you again.
It was lovely to have you.
In the next episode.
Yes, because we already...
You have no choice whether you want me back or not.
I've traveled into the future, and you were in the... Hisha's not going to be able to make it, and you're going to have to sub in. It's going to be recorded yesterday, I can just tell.
Okay. It's like the beginning of like a really confusing like Christopher Nolan time travel.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.